You know, I wish we played a round robin. I wish we were able to play Florida State, Miami, and Florida. We'll see who the best is, put the ball down. But we're excited to go to see the Gators.
Hello and welcome to Always College Football. I'm Greg McElroy. And interesting comments there from the head coach of UCF, Gus Malzahn. I'm kind of with him. How much fun would it be to see UCF, Florida State, Florida, and Miami in an annual round robin in the non-conference? That's something I can definitely get on board for, and I think it'd create a lot of interest there in the state of Florida with how things might sort itself out. Welcome to a Thursday edition. Today is April 4th. We hope you're enjoying the show, wherever you're getting the show, whether it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the ESPN YouTube channel. Please like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get the show. I know that this is going to be a really fun conversation with Gus Malzahn. He has been a friend of mine for a long time, dating back to his time even at Arkansas, was at Auburn, of course, spent a lot of time as the head coach at Auburn and the offensive coordinator at Auburn before becoming the head coach at UCF, and what a job I think he's going to do. It's been a bit of a transition going from the AAC to the Big 12, but one that if you look at how BYU fared, Cincinnati fared, everyone struggles with that transition. UCF did too, but I happen to think that he has a much better understanding of how to attack the league moving forward. And I think they have a chance to make quite a bit of noise, not just this year, but in the years to come. Also going to hit a little college football playoff expansion and talk about defense in college football. So let's get to it. It's our conversation with the head coach of UCF, Gus Malzahn. Old friend of mine, friend of the show. I've seen him at many places along the way, whether it was when we were playing him when he was at Arkansas, playing him when he was the coordinator at Auburn, the head coach at Auburn, known coach Gus Malzahn for a very long time. Now he's the head coach of UCF, and he's ushering in a new era. First year in the Big 12 last year, now heading in second year in the Big 12, hoping to make some noise. Coach, thanks so much for joining us, man. How we doing?
Yeah, doing good, man. Thanks for having me. We're right in the middle of spring practice. We have another week and a half, and so far, so good.
How have you kind of approached spring practice now? I mean, you've been around the college game for almost 20 years now, and there was once upon a time where mid-year enrollees never happened. Transfers were rare, and if they transferred, it was oftentimes the summer, so yeah. You had to acclimate guys quickly, but you had time because they weren't eligible that first year. So since you've been at the college game, help us understand just how different spring practice is.
Yeah, it is different. There's no doubt about that. You got to think different. And like you said, I mean, probably almost half our roster is new guys. It's either transfers or freshmen coming in. And so really trying to do a lot of more evaluation. We're letting them compete, see what they're about, trying to let everybody understand the standard that we have really on both sides of the football. But like I said, it's been good. But it is different. There's no doubt about that.
Year four coming up at UCF, it flies. I thought for whatever reason it was year three, and then prepping the interview, it's like, no, this will be year four. It's just going really quickly. Obviously, you had a couple years in the American, then you transitioned to the Big 12. What would you say in that first year, what would you say was the biggest thing you needed to learn or adjust to, knowing the strength of the league and the quality of the teams that you're seeing on a weekly basis?
Yeah. First of all, I mean, this is a great place. And I knew that we would have a good chance of being in a Power Five conference. Just didn't know it was going to be the Big 12. And of course, we had a year to kind of, get prepared. But there's nothing like actually going through it. A lot of people have this misconception that our league is a 7-on-7 league. And it was just the opposite. I mean, there's a lot of 12 personnel. They line up, try to bloody your nose, which I like, but we didn't play real good defense stopping the run. JRP, our quarterback, got hurt the end of game two and was really never healthy. So it was really tough. It was a learning experience for us. It was good for us. I know we'll be better prepared, this year going into the league.
Well, a familiar face coming to handle your defense, Coach Ted Roof. Who you were with at Auburn. He's been at Oklahoma, and you look at the numbers just with what they did defensively. Yeah. When he got to Oklahoma, they were 105th, and they finished 42nd in run defense. I mean, I know 42nd is not where you want to be necessarily, but that's a pretty significant jump when you think of when he took over to where they are as he's departing. So when you evaluated the candidates at the DC spot, what was it about Ted Roof that really stood out?
Well, being familiar, we had success together. Like you said, he was at Auburn with me when I was the coordinator 2009 through 11. We won a national championship together. You know, we've stayed in touch. He, first of all, he's a great person. He kind of fits with what, you know, I like to have in a coordinator and a coach as a person. And we played against him last year. I mean, he brings a lot of pressure, you know, and I think the offensive game is really tough for defenses. It seems like every year it gets tougher, but I really like what he does. I like his pressures and the way he approaches, whether it's even front, odd front. And he's just a really good fit for us. And our players so far, I mean, they're really excited about our defense. And we brought in a couple playmakers, too, to help with that. So, you know, we're looking forward to playing defense with Ted leading us next year.
Second, your notion with Coach Roof. Like, he's one of my favorite people. Like, hated playing against him. You know, that's like one of those – it's like kind of a compliment. It's I think as a coach, it's like the ultimate compliment. Like, I hated playing against him. Like, why did that safety blitz? I don't make any sense, but he got home. And sure enough, I'm going to remember that pressure the next time you bring it. But he's a first-class human being, and I'm really happy that you guys are reunited. You also went out and you added a bunch of transfer guys on that side of the ball as well. You referenced some of the new faces. So how do you roll those guys in? Look, you have some guys that are holdovers from the previous year, but and you know, they were probably going to start spring practice one. They're going to be the guy, but you want to roll those new guys in as well, knowing that they're going to be competing for a position. So how do you handle that? Obviously got to be a little delicate, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things, you know, I really should have brought up about, you know, being what you have to change spring practice from the past. But this place has been really accepting for transfers. Even before I got here, it's a really good destination. So we've got a really good culture. Our guys just want to win. And these guys we brought in, first of all, they're good players, but they're really good people. And so we compete. And, you know, whoever is the best is going to play. Our guys we brought in, you know, I believe we hit on all of them. I mean, that's the good positive. And we have some of those guys have been with us, started as a freshman and a sophomore. Now they're starting to grow up. So, you know, Ted's going to have some playmakers. You know, I really feel good about our defense at this point, you know, finishing up spring.
With him running so many different fronts and looks and pressures, when you're playing again, I think the Big 12, like you referenced, is a really difficult league, even with the addition of the four new teams. I mean, you're going to get some smash mouth. You're going to get some downhill power run game. You're going to get spread. You're going to get pistol. I mean, the type of variation that you see from, say, Oklahoma State, who you guys handled convincingly last year, to what you might see with, say, Kansas, who's basketball and grass, but triple option principle with how they base. You just see a lot of different variations. So does that lead to you wanting to be deeper defensively, more multiple defensively? How do you kind of handle that?
Yeah, Greg, I think it's pretty unique. Okay, so this year, all right, we added the four new teams. We only played two conference games and we actually played the same opponents, you know, last year, which is very unique. But I think you have to be multiple. You're exactly right. I mean, Kansas, man, they're a handful to defend. There's no doubt. Kansas State will line up, hit you in the mouth. I mean, they were very impressive. And then, you know, we have Colorado coming in. We have Arizona. I mean, Utah, everybody knows Utah will line up, hit you in the mouth too. Then we get play Arizona State. So, you know, I think you have to be multiple. I mean, for me, I've always believed you have to stop the run. I mean, doesn't matter who you're playing. You got to stop the run. You got to be able to run the football. And really, that's what we've been focused on this spring and just trying to get back to kind of who we are, you know, as a program.
Now, you mentioned Arizona State. Any friendly banter between you and Kenny Dillingham this offseason? Yeah. You know that Nat well runs deep. There's a long relationship there.
Yeah, there's no doubt. We know each other well. There's no doubt about that. You know, I'm proud of him. It doesn't surprise me at all that he's a head coach right now. And, you know, I expect him to do a really good job there.
He can also rent a car now, which is big. I know he's like 25 or 26 years old, thereabouts. So happy for Kenny, and I know he's going to do great things at Arizona State. Also want to ask you about the schedule. You do have that non-conference game against Florida. I know as a coach, like, you want to handle your conference first. That's the utmost importance, naturally. But knowing where UCF was 10, 12 years ago, trying to get a place at the table, you now have that. And you get that non-conference game against the perennial, you know, state school. That's got to be – I know you had them in a bowl game a while back, but that's got to be one that you've kind of circled, I would think. No game's more important than the other. The next one's the most important one. I get it. But how does UCF view that opportunity when getting a chance to play the Gators.
Yeah, Greg, that's really big for us, and you're exactly right. You know, we recruit this state. I mean, we're constantly competing Florida, Florida State, Miami, you know, in this state for recruiting. We're chipping away. I mean, we're doing really well, but a game like that is going to be very important. It's a non-conference game. You know, we schedule them. You know, we were non-Power 5 now that, you know, we're in the Big 12, but that's a big one. There's no doubt. We fared pretty well last time we played them. That was on a neutral site. We have to go there. I think everybody knows how hard a place that is, but we're looking forward to it. That's a big one, not just game-wise, but that's a big, big one for us recruiting in this state. You know, I wish we played a round robin. I wish we were able to play Florida State, Miami, and Florida. Let's see who the best is and put the ball down, but we're excited to go to see the Gators.
Well, if I had it my way in college football scheduling, you would play that round robin. be amazing to really determine who the state champ is of the state of Florida for sure. Now, we got a whole 9 minutes into the interview before I asked you about KJ Jefferson, which is pretty remarkable. But I still am amazed that a guy that has that many accolades to his name, 36 starts, nearly 8,000 career passing yards, 67 touchdowns, has played football forever. But has played football wearing just one jersey. That's an Arkansas Razorbacks jersey. You bring him to UCF. It feels like a perfect fit for what you guys want to be offensively. So when you were looking at the portal and thinking about adding a quarterback, what was it about KJ that stood out to you?
Well, we knew each other before. You know, I recruited KJ when I recruited Bo Nix. So we got a chance to know each other. And, you know, really, you look at our offense, we've had really, really good success when we've had a skill set like KJ. Now, he's unique. I mean, he is big. He is fast. He can flat out throw the ball down the field. You look at his vertical passing. He's a natural guy. So when he went in the portal, I mean, we were all in. And that was a guy we had circled that we just think he's a perfect fit for us. Now that he's been with us, I believe it even more. I just like his approach, and you can just see how many snaps he's had in his career. I mean, nothing surprised him. He's very, very impressive. Really what stood out to me when things break down, he's made great decisions, not here, but even all the way back to Arkansas. So, you know, he's ready to lead us, and, you know, we're excited to have him.
Now, I love KJ Jefferson, the person. The player, I've been – I don't want to say troubled. That's probably the wrong word. But I watch him, and there's moments where it's like, this guy's the best player in the country. Yeah. I mean, like, I remember calling the Texas A&M game a couple of years ago in the first half of that football game. He was untouchable. I mean, Cam Newton-esque. I mean, really. Yeah. I mean, he was that good. And then in the second half, he just couldn't sustain that momentum. So I know you've coached quarterbacks for a long time, but how do you get the guys to avoid those ebbs and flows and to kind of just maintain that consistency from the start of the game to the end of the game?
Yeah, you know, we're going to build around his strengths. I mean, that's first of all. And he's got many strengths, you know, as far as that goes. But I just think it's about preparation. And, you know, I know he's hungry right now, so we're real excited to have him.
I think that's a tremendous match for you guys to have that opportunity. And I'm happy for him, too, to go play in such a quarterback-friendly system that is going to allow him plenty of opportunities both through the air and on the ground as well. Looking at the rest of your playmakers, look, UCF's never been a team that couldn't run. You guys are going to have speed all over the field. And it feels like you've recruited to that, watching you last year and then watching what you guys have brought in this year as well. So how much have you continued to lean into that, hey, UCF speed, we're going to attract the fastest guys and we're going to make them into elite football players, but we also want to get the football players too that also have that big time track speed as well. So how do you kind of balance that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you try to recruit speed. There's no doubt about that. You know, receiver-wise, Kobe Hudson, Xavier Townsend, I mean, those guys can flat out do it. Those are veterans coming back. RJ Harvey, our running back, I think he's going to have a chance to be one of the better running backs in all of college football. So we got some really good pieces around KJ, and I think our offensive line will be solid too.
I was going to ask you about RJ because you've had so many good backs. I mean, I've lost count of how many guys you've had in the Doak Walker mix. Yeah. He does feel like a guy that maybe nationally people don't know a lot about. But if you watch him for 10 minutes, you're like, this is a guy that should be well known across the country. So how do you anticipate him improving this year?
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that actually started out college football playing quarterback in Virginia, transferred in. You know, he was still learning to play running back position the last 2 years, and I think he's one of the best in the country. He plays great without the ball. He's got great vision, great lateral quickness. You know, I've been blessed, like you said, to coach some of the best to ever play, and he's at least in that conversation, so we just got to keep him healthy, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
And, Coach, as we move into the 12-team playoff format, you as the head coach of Auburn would have made the playoffs, I think, three times, right, had the 12-team format been in existence. Now your UCF, had the 12-team playoff been in existence with UCF, they would have made it three times. So I feel like the expansion really helps a program like UCF. But at the same time, you know, when you get there and you gotta earn your way from that point forward. Yeah. So how do you anticipate the 12-team schedule or 12-team format kind of playing out for your school and for college football kind of in a bigger picture sense?
Yeah, I've been pushing this for a long time. I'm a former high school coach, and, you know, you think quarterfinals, semifinals, finals is as good as it gets. And I know for sure it's best for the game of football, college football. You know, you saw the last few years. I mean, some of the, you know, top bowls were no longer important. People sitting out and everything with that. So I know it's good for college football. I think it's really good for us. You know, I think we'll have, you know, preseason, every season before the season, we'll at least have a real chance. And so real excited about that. And, you know, so we'll be fighting every year to be in that final 12.
And finally, and you already kind of referenced it, the new additions to the Big 12. Not that you're going to give away the secrets that you've learned, but you just made this transition. Now, the Pac-12 going to the Big 12, a little different animal than the AAC going to the Big 12. But if you could give some advice to Deion Sanders and to Coach Brennan and to Coach Whittingham and ultimately Coach Dillingham, if you could give them some advice on moving into the league, what advice would you share?
I don't know if I need to give them very, very much advice. You know, I'll say this. It's almost like I said earlier, I mean, we only have two conference opponents we're playing that we played last year. So it's kind of also new for us. But, you know, the travel definitely was a factor. You know, you're talking East Coast to West Coast, and you've got to manage that. I know that was a big deal, you know, for us last year. I think we had more air miles than any team in college football. And, you know, from a coach's standpoint, you strategic, oh, we're going to do this and do that. But there's nothing like going through it and all that. And so I think that's probably the big thing.
Well, you'll have some competition this year for UCLA and some of those other schools on the West Coast. No, they're going to log some miles also. Maybe you put that in your next contract, Coach. You get the, you know, American or Delta or United miles wherever far you fly. Is that something you can maybe work in?
Yeah, I wish I'd have started that last year. Okay, but yeah, there's no doubt. I may be thinking that way in the future.
Well, terrific stuff, Coach. Good luck this spring. We can't wait to see the new look defense under Coach Roof and how KJ continues to progress. Yeah. And we look forward to watching your spring game and cheering you on in year number 4 at UCF, year number 2 in the Big 12.
All right, Greg. Thanks for having me, man.
Are defenses starting to strike back? I mean, there throughout the 2010s, it was all about offense. Who could fill it up? Who could push the ball vertically, create and manufacture big plays? But if you look at some of the best teams in the country, a la Michigan last year, the best defenses are starting to position themselves to potentially win national championships on that side of the ball with a complementary approach on the offensive side. We just talked to Gus Malzahn a moment ago about their transition on defense, going to Ted Roof and a more multiple style attack. We've already seen it a bunch of different places. So we went through and picked out a few storylines that I think need to be discussed with some of the big championship contending teams heading into this upcoming year. Because defensively, there's a lot of question marks, but there's also a lot of certainties on a bunch of these rosters. So let's go through it. We will start in the Big Ten, a team that I think might be number one in college football heading into this upcoming season. It's the Ohio State Buckeyes. Last offseason, there was so much progress made 2 years ago with Jim Knowles, but that was before the last two games of the year. The last two games of the year against Michigan and then against Georgia in the semifinal, that defense that improved so greatly throughout 2022 came back down to earth. So I guess you could say it was a somewhat disappointing year for Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator, even though I kind of looked at the fact that they grew tremendously from the year before as a real positive. Some would say because of the way they finished, there wasn't a lot of progress made. So last year we go into the season saying, well, Jim Moles, he's got to figure this thing out. You just can't give up 40 plus in the semifinal game. Just can't give up 40 plus to your arch rival. Well, the Buckeyes did just that. They held 7 of 12 FBS opponents to their fewest yards per play and allowed more than 17 points just once all year. They were very, very efficient. Very efficient on the defensive side. And while their offense wasn't quite as good as they've been in years past, they still finished 11-2 and had a real chance, if not for a turnover and a player here or there, to knock off the eventual national champion Michigan Wolverines. Now, they've adjusted what they're doing on offense, and we'll talk about that on a later date, and we feel great about what they have on that side of the ball and the progress that'll likely be made on that side of the ball. But when you look at their defense, this might actually be the strength of their team. They returned 10 of the 14 players who played at least 300 snaps, and they bring back some real difference makers. You got the ends and JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer, who combined for 16 tackles for loss and 11.5 sacks. You bring back the linebacker Sonny Styles, who was excellent there defending the run. You bring back a couple of great corners and Denzel Burke, who many people thought might go to the league, and Davison Igbinosin, who I think are really, really solid there on the perimeter. And then you have a couple of guys up the front, like Tyleek Williams, that might be able to take over the game from the tackle spot. Then you add Caleb Downs. That's right. You add Caleb Downs, who might, pound for pound, be as good as any player, regardless of position in the country, as a true freshman last year. And Jim Knowles, you know what he wants to do. I mean, he wants to utilize a lot of different faces, give you a lot of different looks, and you can make a case that there are very few teams in college football that have a better secondary as far as depth and talent than the Buckeyes. So a couple of storylines to think about there with the Buckeyes as they head into 2024. But what about the defending champs, the Michigan Wolverines? Now, there was a mass exodus off that staff. They took Jesse Minter, who was amazing. He was great as the defensive coordinator, but Sharon Moore wasted no time. He went out and he said, I'm going to go and get a slam dunk, no-brainer, highly respected, universally respected coach that has spent some time with John Harbaugh in the past, in 2019 and 2020. I'm going to go out and get Wink Martindale. The last time they went to the Ravens, well, it worked pretty well. And while things didn't go great for Wink Martindale with the New York Giants, few things have for the New York Giants the last couple of years. If you look at what Martindale has done, they've been a group that really likes to get after the opposing quarterback. They love to bring pressure. They love to bring heat. And while they do have to replace a bunch of players, they lose half of the players that played 250 plus snaps. So they lose 9 out of 18. They're still in a really good spot, though, when you look at some of the pieces that are returning. If you look at the returning production numbers, not great. But the pieces that are coming back give me an awful lot of optimism. You have unbelievable edge presences with Derek Moore and Josiah Stewart. You got Kenneth Grant, who is probably about as active as you'll find on anybody. That's 330, 340, 350. He'll pair with Mason Graham in the middle, so you have four guys up front that can take over the game. Now you have Will Johnson back, which is enormous, because there was a time there where Will Johnson, I mean, you put him on some of the best receivers in college football, they're going to have a less than stellar day. You got a couple of great safeties in Makari Page and Quentin Johnson that should be rock solid and make sure that they'll be able to kind of keep things in front and make sure the communication between all three levels of the defense will be just fine. And I think you can make a real strong case that Will Johnson is as good as anybody in the sport right now returning at the cornerback spot. So a few things to keep in mind, new defensive coordinator, but I cannot imagine Michigan's identity defensively changing that drastically. And they played so many guys last year. So many guys, and they rotated so many guys, even though they weren't starters, even though they weren't complete game changers, they weren't guys that were cemented in the starting lineup playing 500 plus snaps. There's a lot of guys that played a lot. Now they're just going to have to go from playing 190 snaps to, say, 400 snaps. And I think the transition will be easier for Michigan than it will be for most. Let's also keep it in the Big Ten, talk about a team that if they can just get a little bit out of their defensive side, just a little bit, they might be able to make some noise. And that's the USC Trojans. Now, Lincoln Riley, his teams have not been great on the defensive side since he became a head coach. He's been a head coach now for 7 years. And if you look back dating to his time at Oklahoma, they have never been elite on that side of the ball. But there were some moments. If you look back to how they played in 2020, they were okay. Finished in the top 25 in the S&P Plus ranking. But if you look at his last Oklahoma defense, they slipped all the way down to the mid-50s. Two seasons at SC, they've been 87th and 105th, respectively, in the S&P Plus rankings. That's just not good enough. That's just not good enough. Now, it's one of those scenarios where it's like, I don't need USC. I don't know about you guys. Like, I don't need USC to go out and be a top 15 defense for them to be really, really good. And when I say really good, I'm talking playoff contender. I need them to be in the top half. I need them to be in the top 50 defensively. Like I said, since Lincoln Riley took over at SC, his defense has been 87th and 105th. If they can get to, say, 45th, think about how many more teams would have a very difficult time facing the Trojans. Because you know they're going to score. You know they're going to get their yards. They're going to get their points. And they had to rely so heavily on turnovers in 2021 when the turnovers dried up in 2022, when the turnovers dried up in 2023, they came back down to earth and finished triple dig at 105. But they do have some really good pieces back, and they've made a huge emphasis on getting bigger, on getting more physical, and as a result, hopefully they'll be able to hold up a little better against the run, especially in a line of scrimmage league like the Big Ten. You can expect a boost from Danton Lynn. He's the replacement for Alex Grinch. He was at UCLA before, and in his lone year with the Bruins, they were a terrible defensive team. Terrible. A team that ranked in the mid-90s. They got all the way up to 17th last year. They also held USC to a season-low 20 points, including three total rushing yards. You think that might have had a bit of an impact on how Lincoln Riley evaluated his prospects after the season and trying to find a defensive coordinator replacement? I think that's a safe bet. Danton Lynn's going to be huge. They also went out and got Matt Entz. They went out and got some other really good defensive coaches to help fortify a group that has been much maligned, especially in the front seven defensively. Now, will they adjust practice? Will they have more full contact practices? I don't know. Will they be able to change the culture in 1 year? I really don't know. And they don't have a ton of guys back that have played an ample lot of time. So it'll be a very difficult task for Danton Lynn to get this group playing in the top 40s, which is where I think they ultimately need to be if this SC team's going to make a jump and compete for the college football playoff. But I do think just the nature of the Big Ten alone will assist in that. You're not going to be playing teams that can fill it up offensively quite like some of the teams that you faced last year. So hopefully USC can take a significant step forward, be a little bit more physical, and if they can, they should be in a really good spot. Let's move to the SEC, a team that also struggled on the defensive side, and it led to a complete overhaul on that side of the ball, the LSU Tigers. You look at LSU's personnel. Just look at their personnel, measure them in a combine setting, put them in drills and work them out, you're going to be blown away with the talent that they have. You are. They have a ridiculous amount of talent. Now, that talent does not necessarily always mean to cohesiveness, does not always lean into being united with their defensive run fits. It doesn't always mean they're going to be on the same page in the back end. I mean, goodness gracious, we're talking about a team that allowed 47 points per game in their losses last year, and they do not have Jaden Daniels anymore. Jaden Daniels, a first-round quarterback, a couple of first-round wide receivers. Their offensive coordinator, Mike Denbrock, is gone. So the defense, they're going to have to play much, much better if LSU is going to sustain any level of consistency as far as the win-loss column is concerned. Brian Kelly went out, evaluated the entire landscape. He decided that former Missouri defensive coordinator Blake Baker is the best available candidate, went out and made him the highest-paid assistant coach in college football. Now, Blake Baker is super aggressive, and he really empowers his personnel to pin their ears back and go after the quarterback, and he's got some pieces. Paris Shand, Harold Perkins, Braden Swinson, you have some known commodities. Now it's about getting those guys to play where they have to play every single game at a level that they just didn't play at any point last year. If you look at Harold Perkins in particular, they moved him from defensive end, where he just had to rush the passer on obvious third down passing situations. They moved him off the ball. It just wasn't good. Really wasn't good. Now, I don't think people disagree with me here. A lot of people think, well, hey, just go put him at defensive end. Okay, well, fine. He's not great against the run. And on obvious passing downs, yeah, he's a handful. Probably the best in the sport. But how many obvious passing downs are there? What percentage of the offensive snaps are obvious passing downs? 22-23% of the offensive snaps? So you're only maximizing his ability on one quarter of the offensive snaps. So I think moving him off the ball where he can have a little bit more of an impact is important, but he has to break out like he did in 22 here in 24. If he doesn't, he's going to, I think he will, by the way. Like, I don't know how you can justify. Now, you look at the numbers, he had 15 tackles for loss, 5 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, and interceptions. So there were some good moments, but the good moments were too few and far between. Hopefully, Blake Baker will put him in a position to be really aggressive, and they have to fix the secondary as well. It's an experienced group, so that should be impactful. 6 of last year's top 7 DBs return, but the problem is they were really inconsistent in coverage. They did bring in Jordan Gilbert from Texas A&M and former Ohio State corner J.K. Johnson and Jair Brown. Those guys, I think, are going to have to step up. But the secondary is the one thing I'll be paying very close attention to with LSU as we continue to navigate throughout the offseason. The Alabama Crimson Tide have done things a certain way for a very long time. Since Nick Saban arrived in 2007, they ran a very specific style defense. It's a pattern match defense, which is really zone coverage, but actually it's man. So yes, you're responsible for a certain part of the field. You're responsible for a certain receiver or a guy that would enter into your passing zone. But really, it's man the way you pass off coverage from one guy to the next. So it's man coverage, and it's a very complicated scheme. But it's one that they ran with great effectiveness for the better part of the last two decades. Now, things are going to change quite a bit. Quite a bit. Because they always kind of rooted their defense in a traditional 3-4 defensive front, even though college football kind of adjusted and they became a lot more 4-2-5 as more and more teams went to the spread to try to neutralize the advantages that Alabama had when lined up in their 3-4. So they've already started to make this adjustment, but it's going to change, I think, a little bit more under Kane Womack, who is terrific, by the way. I thought this was a terrific hire for Kalen DeBoer. If you look at what Kane Womack did, he was the head coach of South Alabama, and prior to his arrival, they had allowed about 37 points per game. That's what the Jags had given up. Well, they improved to only 25 points per game in Kane Womack's first season, and then 24 points per game in the next season. Now, he got hired by Indiana at the Power 5 level, where he happened to overlap with Kalen DeBoer for just 1 year. And if you look at what Indiana was defensively in the Big Ten when Kane Womack was hired, they clearly overachieved in 2019, and that was the year that Kane Womack and Kalen DeBoer were there. They allowed only 24 points per game, and the Hoosiers at that point had allowed 33 points per game for the 10 years prior, and 29 since Kane Womack left. Now, the personnel should be rock solid. At Mike linebacker, you have an All-American candidate in Deontay Lawson. At the Sting linebacker, you have Jihad Campbell, who filled in admirably last year when Deontay Lawson was sidelined with an injury. Now, the edges of the defense is something that I'll be paying very close attention to. Now, Quandarius Robinson, he's a veteran. He's going to get plenty of cracks at it, but I expect it to be a defensive end pass rush by committee type of team. Keanu Cott has a chance to, I think has a chance to be a real difference maker there on the edge. Keon Keeley, Jeanze Pierre, and Quay Rousseau, those guys are all probably in position to have a big impact on the edges of that defense. But at corner, that's an important piece that Kane Womack and Kalen DeBoer need to figure out after this first spring. You likely have Damani Jackson, who will be the top corner. He transferred over from USC, has high-level Power 5 experience and elite speed, was a blue-chip recruit a couple years back, but who's going to occupy the other spot? It's likely to be Jahlil Hurley there at the very beginning, but there's a bunch of guys that they're going to be evaluating at that spot here throughout the rest of spring, throughout summer. They could add a piece in the portal if one becomes available, but that's something that I would be keeping a close eye on, is that corner opposite Damani Jackson. At the safety spots, they should be in good spot. The Rover, more than likely to be Malachi Moore, a guy that's really versatile, can move all over the place, can play at the nickel spot, can play at the safety spot. At Husky, probably looking at Tony Mitchell, who's really good, built kind of like a linebacker, so you get that versatile piece that if he has to play against the run, he can handle that. Then at free safety, you'll have some combination of Keon Sabb and Devontae Smith, either of which should be rock solid. And in the event in which both play, then that can free Malachi Moore to play up and play some different positions. So I think they have a lot of answers, but structurally, it will be very different for the Crimson Tide, and they'll be playing a lot more vision coverage. Vision coverage basically being a real fancy way of saying zone, as opposed to the man coverage that we saw for the last 17 years. In the Big 12, Oklahoma State underwent a massive transition from 2022 to 2023. Brian Nardo came in, and Oklahoma State, it became a 3-3-5 team, a team that wants to play a very specific style. Three defensive linemen, three linebackers that flow all over the place and make a lot of plays, three safeties in the back end. They're really, really interesting with how they structure them. There aren't a lot of guys that run it the way Brian Nardo does. Brian Nardo came from a really small school, got his first crack at the big time last year with Oklahoma State, had some mixed results, especially in the last six games where they allowed 7+ yards per play, but there were some things that were pretty positive in the time span that they were playing. They were, I think, pretty disruptive at times. They weren't elite at all. They definitely, I think, need to get more accustomed to playing the style of defense that they play. Now, they still won 10 games, which tells you that the offense is going to be pretty good behind Ollie Gordon. They're going to play complementary style football. They averaged 39 points per game last year in their last seven wins, but the defense needs to take a step. Now, they did have some injuries. They did have some depth issues, and moving from what they ran with the four down front to a three down front and allowing those linebackers to flow freely, that I think will be a little bit more solidified here in year number two. And they return a bunch of guys that played a lot of football, losing just four players that played significant snaps last year, and a guy that got hurt early in Lyric Rawls, who was injured after the first three games. He'll be back this year. You have a couple of major difference makers at linebacker in Nick Martin and Colin Oliver. Those guys can take over the game. And I think Nardo has learned a lot more what it's all going to be about. A Division II coach just a couple years ago, and now he's been at the Power 5 level. I think if you look at Oklahoma State, they should be a significant leap up on the defensive side, and that should allow Oklahoma State to be in a great position to be in the championship game yet again here in the new look Big 12. Finally, we'll move to the ACC. The Clemson Tigers, they are, I think, going to be one of the best defenses in the sport. Now, a lot of people are going to sit here and look and say, well, are they going to be as good as they once were? I can't answer that. I really don't know, because I look at what they are and the personnel that they bring back. They had a bunch of guys last year that were true freshmen playing ample snaps. Now, you look at their pass defense last year, they're one of the best in the country. You look at some of the production that you got from the freshmen, those guys, if they can take a step this year, and the biggest leap you make as a player from time to time is from year one to year two. So what does that mean for defensive end TJ Parker, who had 11.5 tackles for loss? What does that mean for defensive tackle Peter Woods, who had 7 run stops added behind the line of scrimmage? What does that mean for the corner, Avion Terrell? What does it mean for Khalil Barnes, who I think is excellent, really, really good safety, played some nickel, can kind of move him around? They were among the best players in the field last year. Now they're going to be the anchor of a unit that also brings back safety RJ Mickens and also brings back their linebacker, a stud that's probably only going to take a significant step in the absence of Trotter, Barrett Carter. You look at this group. Now, run defense last year was somewhat unrecognizable compared to what we expect from Clemson. But there's a lot to like about the depth they have along the front, including Peter Woods, including Peyton Page, including Demonte Capehart, and a lot of the pieces that could return that played ample time last year. I expect Clemson's defense to take a significant step this year behind the advancement of some of those freshmen. And since they're close enough to the ACC, we'll put Notre Dame here as well. Notre Dame is, I think, in a position, based on history, to take a step defensively. But there are some pieces that need to be replaced. The last time the Irish had a third-year defensive coordinator, the program posted an unbeaten regular season and made the college football playoff. Well, Al Golden is in year three. If you look at where they were, they led the nation last year in pass efficiency. They don't give up a lot of big plays. They didn't really get beat on third down, and they could create some pressure when they need it. Yeah, they had a bad night against Louisville. They did. But if you look at what Al Golden put on the field last year, probably wouldn't be expecting that team, based on their defensive numbers, to be playing in the Sun Bowl. They're really strong in the defensive backfield, and they're really strong at defensive tackle. That's a great place to start. Howard Cross is coming off of an All-American season. They're a defensive tackle. He's back again, a little undersized, but really quick and really disruptive. He'll be alongside Riley Mills, who might be the best-looking defensive player on their roster. Big, physical, long, and should be a perfect complement and space eater to allow Howard Cross a lot of one-on-ones to create some issues. At corner, Benjamin Morrison is one of the best players on the field at any point. Remember, he matched up, went head-to-head with Marvin Harrison, and really, for the most part, shut him down. What could he do this year? I think he's poised to become one of the best corners in the country if he can continue to build on what he did last year. You also have Xavier Watts, who was a National Defensive Player of the Year candidate last year. Obviously had a ton of interceptions, knows how to find the football, especially transitioning from wide receiver to safety. He's got great ball skills. I expect Xavier Watts to be in a really good spot, and I love the addition of the transfer from Northwestern and Rod Hurd. Now, I called Northwestern's bowl game last year, and the guy that continued to jump out over and over and over again was Rod Hurd. He was really good, had great instincts, played with great eyes, and once he gets up to speed and gets comfortable with this defensive scheme, I think he can be an impact player for the Irish. Now, the big question is it going to be Jaden Mickey opposite Benjamin Morrison at corner, or will he be pushed by the younger Christian Gray, who had some bright spots as well? Now, linebacker is the position that I have the most questions about. They had some departures, some guys that were significant, but you bring back Jack Kaiser, who's, you know, sixth year, played a ton of football, and now is the expected advancement of Jalen Snead. Now, he's undersized, but he's crazy athletic and can provide some speed off the edge in a pass rush situation, but he needs to be an every down option this year, playing off the ball and inside. That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Continue to encourage all of you to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get the show. Also want to thank our friends at Holderness and Bourne. They do an amazing job. They've outfitted me for the show, the best possible sportswear, golfwear, you name it. It's just terrific stuff. I love their hoodies as well. So check them out at holdernessandborn.com and follow us at alwayscfb and follow me at Greg McElroy. We're going to do a giveaway here with Holderness and Born here very, very soon. So if you're following me and Holderness and Born and Always College Football, you'll get some free gear. So that's something to keep an eye on. So check your social channels there as well. So for all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have a terrific day. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.